Radio Network celebrates its first Fabulous 50.
Howdy! I will see you
there! Hi-ho, everybody.
Good evening, Mr. First Lantern.
Good evening, Mr. Mr. North American. All the ships at sea. Let's go to press.
The only thing we have to fear.
Ladies and gentlemen, easy aces.
We are resolved to destroy Hitler.
Henry Aldrich.
Mr. Chairman.
You were expecting maybe Emperor Shapiro Hito.
Everybody awake. Let the word go forth.
Ignition. Lift off.
I have a dream.
Hello, Lyndon.
How mortifying.
Flown like a butterfly.
And staying like a bee.
Let me make one point clear.
NBC Radio, America's first network, presents highlights from its first 50 years. 5 one-hour shows with hosts Arlene Francis, Bob Hope, Bing Crosby, John Chancellor, and Ben Grauer, with special material by Joe Garagiola and Edwin Newman. Brought to you in part by the premium wines of Ernest and Julio Gallo. By Delta, the airline run by professionals. Delta is ready when you are. By Wrigley Friedent Gum. And by True Value Hardware Stores. Not just a name. It's our way of doing business. And now, here's Arlene Francis.
Whose very first show on NBC Radio was What's My Name? But since you already know that answer, what is the name of the exciting new program concept that began NBC's fourth decade? Here's a clue. Right, monitor. Our motto was going places and doing things. And we called our hosts communicators. And no one could communicate better or more warmly than Dave Garraway.
Isn't that a mad noise? That's Monitor's trademark, and we'll call your attention to the show most any time you hear it. In fact, they now have a thing called the Monitor Mambo. Mambo, if you like. And we're going to give you a sneak preview of it. Just been recorded by Perez Prado, the old Mambo King. It's so new that the record is still soft and quivering here.
And away we mumboed, or cha-cha'd, or whatever, right through the weekend, proving that good things do come in small packages of music, comedy, sports, interviews, something different every few minutes. And if there was something unusual to be heard, you heard it on Monitor.
Washington. 73, partly cloudy. Birmingham, 74, partly cloudy. Atlanta, 73, partly cloudy. Miami, 75, rain.
Miss Monitor, she could make even a rainy day seem sunny. Breaking news got first call, of course, as it always does on NBC. And in 1956, when the line of Stockholm ran into the Andrea Doria off Nantucket Island, an NBC newsman flew over the stricken Italian ship.
Vessel has been written in history, and now only the tip of the stern of the ship is visible. Just a bare look at the propellers, and now the Andrea Doria is gone.
A tragic loss. And on Monitor, you met and sometimes really got to know the most famous people of the day. Marilyn Monroe, for instance, when she talked with Dave Garraway.
After you got what you want, did you want it?
Well, the thing I like the most is to become a real actress.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember when I was a kid, sitting in the front row at the movies on Saturday afternoon. And I would never come out of the movie. They'd have to come and get me. You know, I'd sit in the front row. And I think how wonderful it would be to be an actress and so forth. But I didn't really realize about acting. However, I realize more and more the responsibility. And it is a responsibility. And as I say, I would like to be a good actress.
Mm-hmm. Good night, Marilyn.
On a less serious note, a lot less, there were Bob and Ray, who were in residence here at Radio Central all through the weekend in those days.
Now we get to go to Chicago for the lively songs of Sauter Finnegan.
Well, I'll just press the button here.
This is a strong heart.
Oh, wait a minute. Wrong button. I'm going to try this again. Wait a minute. May I never touch another button again? If they only had zippers on the control board.
Well, I tell you what, why don't you just ask Chicago to come in like that big sign there says?
What sign?
The one that fellow with the purple face and the wild staring eyes is holding up.
Oh, let's see. We go now. It says, to the Blue Note in Chicago and the monitor music of Sauter Finnegan.
Right now, here is the Sauter Finnegan Orchestra and Doodletown Fifers.
Well, we never did replace the buttons on the control board with zippers. And we didn't replace Bob and Ray either. We just added to them Nichols and May, Ernie Kovacs, Jonathan Winters. We'll hear them later. As for communicators, through the years there were Clifton Fadiman, Hugh Downs, Ben Grauer, Frank McGee, Gene Rayburn, Joe Garagiola, who, by the way, will be joining me here in a little while. Many others. Need I say more? And answering my own question, I say no. Not for the moment, at least.
Arlene Francis will return with more of the First Fabulous 50 shortly.
The first...
The First Fabulous 50 continues. Once again, Arlene Francis.
As you've already heard, the sound of NBC radio changed radically in the mid-50s. And other sounds were changing, too. Yes, young Mr. Presley, Elvis the Pelvis, they called him. And like young Frank Sinatra in his time, he generated emotions in the younger generation.
Well, my word about Elvis, I don't think you get anything better. He just doesn't compare to anything else. I just love him. Oh, baby, he's gorgeous. Oh, he's just so different. There isn't anything. He brings out every good emotion in you.
Good emotions. Unfortunately, those weren't the only kind in evidence in those days.
I woke up this morning with my mind set on freedom.
In the real world, harsher emotions surfaced as the struggle by black Americans for their share of the rights guaranteed by the Constitution. These began to accelerate. Some barriers had been broken, but there was strong, often violent opposition. Joe Garagiola witnessed this at first hand as a Major League Baseball player before he came to NBC, and we've asked him to pick it up from there. Joe?
Right, Arlene. I was on the St. Louis Cardinals the year that Jackie Robinson became the first black player to come to the major leagues with the Brooklyn Dodgers. And I gotta tell you, he wasn't exactly welcomed with open arms. Mr. Branch Rickey, though, made the perfect choice when he chose Jackie Robinson. I know of no other man who could have done what Jackie Robinson did. The abuse that he had to take from some of the players and from some of the fans, well, fierce, that's the only word I can think of. But Robinson had the courage to take it. But when it came to really big league bigotry, though, it had nothing to do with sports. In Montgomery, Alabama, in 1956, a rally was held.
The Knights of the Ku Klux Klan have saved America twice in history. And if this country is saved again, it'll be the Knights of the Ku Klux Klan that'll do it.
Amen. To you, that this is a white man's country, and we do not...
What brought this on? Well, a few months earlier, Rosa Parks, a black woman, had refused to move to the back of the bus, a city bus, and she was arrested and fined $14. The leaders of the black community called for a bus boycott, and a new voice was heard.
This will be a spiritual movement, and I believe that on this day, this hour, we will have the full cooperation of 99.9% of the Negroes in Montgomery. And like Enoch of old, I believe that we are determined to walk with God.
That was the Reverend Martin Luther King Jr., then a Montgomery pastor. He was later arrested, had his home bombed, but the boycott went on. But with the federal government and some states lending support to the law of the land, school integration was beginning in the South. in Clinton, Tennessee, population 4,000, where a high school was to be integrated, a leading white citizen spoke.
As editor of the newspaper, I've done everything I could since last January to help prepare the people for the fact that the law is the law, that our government is based upon law, and we can do nothing else but accept it, no matter how we feel about it individually and personally.
But the Ku Klux Klan rode into town and saw it all as a communist plot.
But the communist says, one world government, one world economy, one world geographically, and a one world race!
A riot followed when the school opened, and it had to be closed again. A young black student told NBC,
I think that if the outsiders had stayed out, we wouldn't have any trouble at all. We could come to school and walk to school every morning, and the children here treat us real nice. And I think if the outsiders would leave us alone, we'd get along just fine.
Then a rising young reporter, John Chancellor, who had gone to Clinton to cover the story, made this report.
15 Tennesseans who are charged with working against the peaceful integration of the Clinton High School were arrested today and tonight in a federal action that made quite a bit of history. About an hour and a half after the last federal prisoner had been sent to Knoxville, the Anderson County School Board voted to reopen the high school on Monday with a legal welcome mat out for the Negro students.
A breakthrough in education in Clinton, Tennessee. And then on December 21st, 1956, in Montgomery, Alabama,
the year-old protest against city buses is officially called off. And the Negro citizens of Montgomery are urged to return to the buses tomorrow morning on a non-segregated basis.
And with this victory, Martin Luther King became a national figure. Well, there you have it, Arlene. The civil rights movement got a tremendous lift. But as we all know, there were rough times ahead.
There were indeed. Thank you, Joe. Joe Garagiola.
Arlene Francis will return with more of the First Fabulous 50 right after this. NBC Radio's First Fabulous 50 continues. Once again, Arlene Francis.
From the mid-50s on, the airwaves were enlivened by the sounds of Monitor. But in 1957, we had company. The sound of Sputnik, Earth's first man-made satellite. And it wasn't exactly music to our ears because it belonged to the Soviet Union, not us. Well, for the time being, we had to grin and bear it. And happily, on Nightline, NBC's weeknight counterpart of Monitor, satirist Mort Saul, helped us grin.
The other night, I was sitting with my ham set, and I picked up the beep from the Sputnik. And I pick up a lot of things on my radio. For instance, I picked up a little action out at the airport. There was a plane coming in, and neither pilot was available to bring the plane in. They were both unnerved. And I understand the stewardess took the plane over, and they woke up the manager of the airways, and I heard the manager saying, Janet, there's no reason you can't bring this plane in just like a qualified pilot if you'll follow my instructions. And she was really out of her head, you know, because she was up there making sandwiches and warming milk, and she kept saying a lot of ridiculous things like, well, I know, Captain Williams, that's true technically, but if I project myself into what essentially is a man's role up here, when I land, won't I have trouble taking up my life as a woman in a healthy fashion?
Well, sounds like the script for Airport 75, doesn't it? Almost 20 years ahead of its time. Also on Nightline at that time was this regular feature.
One slice of pheasant, 100 calories, one cup of popcorn, 50 calories. 12 lychee nuts, 100 calories.
Luckily, that voice, rich as it was, contained no calories at all. It belonged to Frank Gallup, still does. Nightline and Monitor weren't the only programs on NBC Radio, of course. There was this grand old favorite, too.
The National Farm at Home Hour.
From 1928 on, this program provided valuable information and warm-hearted humor under the guidance of a delightful host,
As a service to agriculture, in cooperation with the United States Department of Agriculture, Ellis Chalmers Manufacturing Company presents the National Farm at Home Hour. It's a beautiful day in Chicago. Yes, this is your old friend Everett Mitchell. The temperature is 16 degrees above zero. Humidity is 79%. Oh, it's a little on the cloudy side, but a great day to be alive. I hope it's even more beautiful wherever you are.
Everett made it beautiful. On another long-lived program, which is still going strong today, you met the people who made the headlines. On Meet the Press, among the guests of Lawrence Bivak, was this visitor from Cuba.
What we want is to get as soon as possible the condition for free election. Not in any condition more than 4 years.
Promises, promises. That was Fidel Castro 17 years ago. And a little later, there was this gentleman who disclaimed any ties to the underworld.
I say, Mr. Spivak, no more so than any one of the reporters sitting at this table have I associated with any thugs or gangsters. But in the course of negotiation, I must necessarily meet with those whom management hires to be able to carry on the business of this union.
Jimmy Hoffa in 1961. There have been hundreds of other headline makers on Meet the Press since then, and you can meet new ones every week here on NBC. But getting back to the fourth decade, you also met the most popular music makers here.
This is the NBC Bandstand. And who could that be but Tommy and Jimmy Dorsey, and I'm Bert Parks, your host. Once again, we're at NBC's Bandstand Room, where the Dorseys are playing their theme, and waiting for their cues are Guy Lombardo, Wayne King, Freddie Martin, and their bands in person. Johnny Mercer will be with us again today, too. Later on in this two-hour program, we'll have the pleasure of a visit from Oscar Hammerstein, the Mr. Words of the famous Words and Music team in the country today, Rodgers and Hammerstein. Right now, let's start moving right along with that perennial favorite of all Dorsey fans, Song of India.
Love to hear the rest of this song, but we're almost at the midpoint in this hour of our first Fabulous 50 celebration on NBC. Time for station identification. Since Bing Crosby was gracious enough to let Tallulah Bankhead handle the ceremony on his hour last week, I'd like to be equally gracious and let Bing take care of it this week, as he once did on one of his music hall shows with Ken Carpenter.
Dr. Crosby, I'd kind of like you all to know that Williams is for it.
Yep. Well, mighty glad to hear so. Mighty glad.
Me and my ma's for it, too.
Ma, too?
Oh, sure. Of course, pa's for it.
Just what is this that your pa's for?
My pa's for station identification.
Well, get me out. Drop the net.
NBC Radio Network continues celebrating its first Fabulous 50. Brought to you in part by your neighborhood McDonald's restaurant. At McDonald's, we do it all for you. By Amana and your Amana retailers. And by Alice Chalmers. The world needs more of what Alice Chalmers makes. And here, once again, is Arlene Francis.
On January 20th, 1961, a new president of the United States offered us this challenge.
And so, my fellow Americans, ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
John F. Kennedy seemed to fire a new determination in us, but there were a few hitches ahead. On April 12th, the Russians once again beat us to the punch, launched the first man into space, and on April 17th, the abortive Bay of Pigs invasion of Cuba didn't do our image any particular good. But on May 5th, we heard this on NBC Radio.
All right, lift off, and the clock has started. Okay, hey, you're on your way.
Well, we had liftoff, and our spirits got a lift, too. Incidentally, while Alan Shepard was up there in space, I wouldn't have been surprised if he'd run into some of the comedians who were featured on Monitor in those days. They were pretty far out, too. Ernie Kovacs was one.
In an attempt to produce an intelligent monkey that would also have great courage, Pepe Ortega crossbred a Capuchin monkey with a wild Brahma bull that had fought six toreadors. What he created, however, was not a brave monkey, but a bull that climbed buildings and collected pennies in a tin cup.
And there was Jonathan Winters, who used to perform before nightclub audiences and send the results to Monitor.
All those sounds are my own. I do a toy. You know, there are a lot of toys. Probably those folks there at home right now are still looking at the toys around the tree.
What did I get?
You see a kid, you know, and the kid picks it up and...
And on NBC Radio of an evening, you'd hear this great musical talent.
The Duke is on the air.
And while the band rocked in Chicago, all across the nation, people at home rocked too, to the music of the man who in later years was to receive the highest civilian award for service to our country, the Medal of Freedom, Edward Kennedy Ellington, the Duke. Now, there's something I've always wanted to do, just like those announcers at the nightclubs. So, from the Blue Note in Chicago, where we've been bringing you the music of Duke Ellington and his orchestra, we now return you to NBC in New York.
Arlene Francis will return with more of the first Fabulous 50 right after this. NBC Radio continues the celebration of its first 50 years. Here once again, Arlene Francis.
Through the years, one of the things that made NBC's Monitor such good listening was the fact that sooner or later you'd get to hear just about everybody who was anybody in every walk of life. A few brief examples. Brigitte Bardot on her first visit here.
People were very nice and recognized me. And I was very surprised because I didn't thought I was so popular in USA.
But you were, Brigitte. And then there was the original America's sweetheart, Mary Pickford, telling us why she produced her own movies.
I don't think I'd want to go into one of those studios where they tell me every move and what I could and couldn't do. You see, my mother's name was Hennessy, and I'm a little bit of a rebel.
And on that much-discussed topic, the lack of privacy many actors complain about, Betty Davis spoke up.
The performer who beefs about no privacy and no life really doesn't want it.
I think she's right. But there was someone whose life was spent on a different kind of stage, the real world. And you could say she was a superstar, Eleanor Roosevelt. When she ended her long career of public service in 1961, she told us,
I would like to see the UN succeed. I would like to see a more peaceful atmosphere grow in the world. I don't expect to see it in my time, but I would like to feel that as much as could be contributed to it, I had contributed.
She really contributed to every aspect of our lives, didn't she? Well, it wasn't long before the United Nations became involved with the crisis over Cuba, which brought with it the threat of the ultimate war.
On October 22, 1962, President Kennedy addressed the nation.
Unmistakable evidence has established the fact that a series of offensive missile sites is now in preparation on that imprisoned island. The purpose of these bases can be none other than to provide a nuclear strike capability against the Western Hemisphere.
At the United Nations, our ambassador, Adlai Stevenson, confronted the Soviet ambassador in a distinctly undiplomatic manner.
Do you, Ambassador Zorin, deny that the USSR has placed and is placing medium and intermediate range missiles and sites in Cuba? Yes or no? Don't wait for the translation, yes or no?
The Russian didn't answer yes or no, as his interpreter indicated.
Sir, will you please continue your statement? You will have your answer in due course.
I'm prepared to wait for my answer until hell freezes over, if that's your decision.
We didn't have to wait that long. Our government took countermeasures, among other things, established a blockade of Cuba. And finally, the president spoke again.
The evidence to date indicates that all known offensive missile sites in Cuba have been dismantled.
There was a huge sigh of relief. President Kennedy became the hero of the hour. But if there's one thing we are in this country, it's irreverent about our heroes. A comedy album titled The First Family became a national favorite.
Family, family, family. Jack, there's just too much family. Can't we ever get away alone?
Tomorrow. I promise tomorrow we'll go away together tomorrow. No more family for a while now, I promise. Now, turn off the light. Good night, Jackie.
Good night, Jack.
Good night, Bobby. Good night, Ethel.
Another kind of humor, if you want to call it that, was provided by the man who had been unsuccessful in his bid to become governor of California in November 1962.
As I leave you, I want you to know, just think how much you're going to be missing. You don't have Nixon to kick around anymore.
That, of course, turned out to be a somewhat premature prediction. In August of the following year, we heard again from Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr. at a civil rights freedom march of 250,000 people in Washington, D.C.
We will be able to speed up that day when all of God's children, black men and white men, Jews and Gentiles, Protestants and Catholics, will be able to join hands and sing in the words of the old Negro spiritual, free at last, free at last.
There is no doubt that those are among the most moving words heard in all of NBC's 50 years.
Arlene Francis will return with more of the first Fabulous 50 shortly. NBC Radio's first Fabulous 50 continues. Once again, Arlene Francis.
A Friday afternoon in Boston, Massachusetts. Outside, crisp and sunny, while inside Symphony Hall, orchestra conductor Eric Leinsdorf stepped up to the microphone.
Ladies and gentlemen, we have a press report over the wires that the President of the United States has been the victim of an assassination.
That gasp of horror was echoed by all of us who heard the terrible news. Edwin Newman, NBC News, was the anchorman of the radio coverage that day, and we've asked him to tell us what happened. You were on your lunch break at the time, weren't you, Ed?
Yes, I was, Arlene. I ran back to NBC and went on the air almost at once. President Kennedy had gone to Texas to improve his political support there. Vice President Lyndon Johnson had gone along, as had Mrs. Kennedy. And that morning in Fort Worth, after receiving the traditional 10-gallon hat, the president was in high spirits.
3 years ago, I said that, introduced myself in Paris by saying that I was the man who had accompanied Mrs. Kennedy to Paris. I'm getting that same sensation as I travel around Texas.
The presidential party then moved on to Dallas.
The president's car is now turning onto Elm Street, and it will be only a matter of minutes before he arrives at the trademark. It It appears as though something has happened in the motorcade route. Something, I repeat, has happened in the motorcade route.
Then, from further along the motorcade route...
We understand there has been a shooting. The presidential car coming up now. We know it's the presidential car. You see Mrs. Kennedy's pink suit. There's a Secret Service man, spread eagle, over the top of the car. We understand Governor and Mrs. Connolly are in the car with President and Mrs. Kennedy. We can't see who has been hit, if anybody's been hit, but apparently something is wrong here. Something is terribly wrong.
Then began the period of waiting. Reports continued from the hospital. The president had been seriously wounded. Governor John Connolly had been wounded, too. Two priests were reported to have administered the last rites to the president. I can remember announcing that myself. Finally, Frank McGee relayed this message.
We have NBC's Bob McNeil on the line now with a report. Please go ahead, Bob. White House Press Secretary Malcolm Kilduff has just announced that President Kennedy died at approximately 1 o'clock Central Standard Time, which is about 35 minutes ago.
After being shot by an unknown assailant during a motorcade drive through downtown Dallas.
There was great concern for the safety of Vice President Johnson, but once the news of President Kennedy's death was confirmed, Mr. Johnson went aboard Air Force One, where he was sworn in as president by an old friend, Judge Sarah Hughes.
I do solemnly swear that I will faithfully execute.
It was only by chance that this record of the swearing-in exists. It was made on a small, non-professional recording machine, which was the only one available. Somebody thought of using it at the very last moment. The nation went into a weekend of mourning, but the somber, reflective mood was shattered on Sunday in the basement of Dallas Police Headquarters, where Lee Harvey Oswald had been taken. Tom Pettit of NBC News was there.
These people have given me a hearing without legal representation or anything.
Did you shoot the president?
I didn't shoot anybody, no, sir.
There is Lee Oswald. He's been shot. Lee Oswald has been shot. There's a man with a gun. It's absolute panic here in the basement of Dallas Police Headquarters. The detectives have their guns drawn. There is no question about it. Oswald has been shot.
With the death of Lee Oswald, the shooting ended. The next day, after the solemn pomp and panoply of a state funeral, a horse-drawn carriage took the dead president to his final resting place on a slope overlooking the Potomac. A bugler played taps, and the 1,000 days of John Fitzgerald Kennedy came to an end.
Thank you, Edwin Newman, NBC News.
More of NBC Radio's first 50 years after this. The first Fabulous 50 continues. Here's Arlene Francis.
As NBC Radio moved toward the end of its fourth decade, Monitor was providing a new kind of comedy on a very personal level by the brilliant Mike Nichols and Elaine May.
Hello.
Hello, Nancy.
No, it isn't. I'm sorry, you have the wrong number.
Is this Rector 44445?
No, it isn't.
Oh, I'm sorry. But don't hang up.
Why not?
Well, I don't know. You sound very nice.
Thank you. Why don't you call the operator? What a wonderful idea that might be.
Well, now, then, listen, don't get angry.
I'm not angry.
What number is this?
This is not Rector 44445.
Yeah, but I didn't say what it was, and I said, what is it?
Well, it isn't what you want.
Well, we don't know that.
Yes, we do. We know that very well. I know that. Now, I'd like you to know it, too, and then we can know it. It'll be a secret that we share.
What do you look like?
I'm very beautiful.
Well, aren't you even curious about me?
No, not at all.
But listen, this might be the big thing in your life.
Yes, it might. What a pity, because I'm going to have to miss it.
Listen, why don't you let me come up and you take a look at me? And if you don't like me, you can just slam the door in my face. Now, that's a deal.
It's not necessary. I don't like you from talking to you.
Well, then why haven't you hung up?
Oh, what a good idea.
What a funny sketch from Nichols and May. But it wasn't all laughs on Monitor. On March 27, 1964, an earthquake rocked Alaska. 114 people died. The worst hit city was Anchorage. Reporter Jeannie Chance of NBC affiliate KENI was in her car when the quake hit.
A service station on the other side of the corner had five cars parked a pretty good distance from each other, but parked side by side. As I sat there and watched, those cars were picked up and slammed into each other and separated and slammed into each other again and again, much like an accordion opening and closing. In another portion of the city, the earthquake had simply created a gap where buildings, parked cars, and the street, 4th Avenue, right in downtown Anchorage, had sunk to a depth of about 30 feet.
Later that same year, a very different kind of shock hit this country. A culture shock, you might call it.
I just think that it's the most wonderful person I've ever met in my whole life. I just love him.
The poor thing. And who were the objects of her affection? The Beatles, of course, who took the nation's younger generation by storm. The Beatles weren't the only brash characters around in 1964. A poet, on the eve of his fight with heavyweight champion Sonny Liston, favored us with his classic ode.
Ding! Clay swings with the left, Clay swings with the right. Look at young Cassius carry the fight. Liston keeps backing, but there's not enough room. It's a matter of time, and Clay lowers the boom. Now Clay lands with the right. What a beautiful swing! And the punch raises the bear clear out of the ring. Who would have thought when they came to the fight that they witnessed the launching of a human satellite? Yes, the crowd did not dream when they laid down their money that they would see a total eclipse of the sunny.
Who needs Shelley or Keats when Muhammad Ali is around? Later that year, on August 2nd, we heard President Johnson addressing Congress.
The determination of all Americans to carry out our full commitment to the people and to the government of South Vietnam will be redoubled by this outrage.
According to the president, the outrage consisted of an attack by North Vietnamese torpedo boats on our naval vessels in the Tonkin Gulf. But although our efforts were more than redoubled, rising from 15,000 men in early 1964 to over 500,000 in the next few years, the determination was not shared by all Americans. Some of the young men called up by their draft boards burned their cards in public protest.
Fundamentally, I'm burning the card because, as an American citizen, I want to make a symbolic break with a government that is violating every decent tradition that this country has stood for.
Thousands more left the country rather than serve in Vietnam, but the war went on. On a different front, in 1965, President Johnson led the fight for civil rights by going to Congress to plead for passage of the Voting Rights Bill and said in part,
their cause must be our cause too. Because it's not just Negroes, but really it's all of us who must overcome the crippling legacy of bigotry and injustice. And we shall overcome.
The bill was passed on August 6th, but its effect was years away. On August 11th, one of the worst riots in our nation's history erupted in the black ghetto of Los Angeles, Watts. Jay Miller was there for NBC News.
As fire sirens continue to whine in southeast Los
Los Angeles on this fourth day of Negro rioting. A few new fires still are cropping up. So far, 1,000 fires have been set here in the past 24 hours, with 300 of those considered as major blazes. As of a few moments ago, the official police statistics show 17 dead, 558 injured, and 1,120 arrests made. Police Chief W.A.
So as NBC approached the end of its fourth decade, it was not the happiest of times for our nation. And as for the next 10 years, well, why don't we let our host for next week's show, John Chancellor, have a word here. John?
Arlene, I don't think it's any exaggeration to describe the years 1966-1976 as the most tumultuous and crisis-ridden in our country's history since the Civil War. I'm happy to say, however, we seem to have survived.
I'm happy too, John. And I'm also delighted to tell our listeners that in addition to all the historic events, there'll be a lot of marvelous comedy surprises and exciting music. I'll be listening. You listen too. This is Arlene Francis.
You have been listening to the first Fabulous 50.